May it please the court. My name is David Bates, and I'll be arguing on behalf of James Colvin. James Colvin was sentenced to 22 years in a federal prison for his first offense, participating in a cross burning that had the result of no physical damage to either person or property. This enormous sentence was the result of the piling on of charge after charge in a manner in which Congress never intended. The government began with a misdemeanor intimidation statute, Section 3631. It then enhanced that statute into a felony because fire was used, which we concede was appropriate. But the government enhanced that misdemeanor yet again, an additional 10 years for using fire during the commission of a felony under Section 844H. Congress did not intend this second enhancement to apply to Mr. Colvin. Busick versus the United States creates special rules dealing with a second enhancement of a felony. It creates a clear statement rule in regards to double enhancement, in that it is allowed only to the extent which Congress specifically so authorizes. Under Busick, when a felony provides for an enhanced penalty for the use of, say, fire, that sentence may not be enhanced again by a separate statute for the same use of fire unless Congress specifically so authorizes. Now, in order to comply with Busick's clear statement rule, Congress amended Section 844H in order to comply with Busick's clear statement rule, and it clearly omitted the use of fire from its authorization of double enhancement. Rather, Congress only intended a second enhancement when the predicate felony was one committed by the use of a deadly or dangerous weapon or device, not ordinary fire. Yes, it can, as this court has pointed out in Agrio-Ladd-Ladd, fire can be used as a deadly or dangerous device.
Your argument here is that here fire wasn't deadly or dangerous, it was
just to eliminate the intimidation. But the fire itself was not the imminent threat to human life. It was merely an expression of an intimidation. Now, correct.
Any kind of Congress to say that cross-burning of this nature is a crime of violence? The same kind to say that fire involved is not involved in taking the English weapon of device?
Well, it's important.
I just can't see how, this is my puzzle with the case. I can't see how we can maintain our belief that cross-burning of fire is a crime of violence. And at the same time, why is your argument that in this particular case, or in these circumstances, fire is not a deadly or dangerous weapon or device for purposes of the other?
Yes. The interesting problems come because this was a second enhancement. Congress is under a clear statement rule because of Busick that it must particularly authorize each and every offense available for a second enhancement. The United States Code is littered with the distinction between fire and deadly and dangerous weapons or devices. Congress knows specifically how to authorize fire when it so chooses. It didn't do so in this instance, and under Busick, the government may not use this statute for a second enhancement. Now, while fire, as you suggest, may be used as a deadly or dangerous weapon or device, it is not a dangerous or deadly weapon or device by definition. This fire on this cross was not a weapon of any sort. It was not used to plan a physical attack on another person. And it was not a device as typically prosecuted under this statute, such as a Molotov cocktail or a pipe bomb. In fact, Section 921A4 kind of informs what Congress had in mind when describing devices, in that they define a device, a destructive device, as one that was designed or redesigned as use for a weapon. Now, this cross does not fit that definition. It was merely an expression or a symbol. And therefore, Section 844H1 doesn't reach that. Well, Your Honor, I have not seen definitions of the term, of the phrase crime of violence in and of itself. Certain felonies are labeled crimes of violence, but take, for example, a Section 3631 violation that was perpetrated by the means of a cross burning. It simply isn't a deadly or dangerous perpetration of that felony. It was one that was done with the expressive tools of fire and not as a dangerous or deadly weapon. Well, and just as Section 844H1 may not be based upon this 3631 violation unless the fire was used as a deadly or dangerous weapon or device, it similarly may not be based upon the conspiracy violation. 844H requires that fire be used. Well, the judge took into consideration the character of the crime under both sections 241 and 3631 and implied a concurrent 2-year sentence for both.
The judge obviously didn't think the sentence should exceed 22 years, but if we were to remand, wouldn't the judge increase the 3631 sentence to 10 years? And then, with the conspiracy term, your client is only left with 22 years.
Your Honor, I believe that Mr. Colvin's trial is complete. The judge took into consideration the relevant factors and
the law of this circuit, if we vacate a particular conviction, we will remand the judge to redo the whole sentence.
Okay.
So the question I'm asking is, given that this judge thought that 22 years was the right term, and she got that combination of
I suppose the judge could, but I do not believe it would be likely. The reaction to sentences under these same four statutes has been very, well, regardless, this is still Mr. Colvin's request that the 844H1 conviction be reversed because it is inapplicable to the conspiracy statute and the intimidation statute. Well, he had 22 years because he used fire during a felony.
And 10 more,
and 10 more as because an automatic weapon was found at sentencing rather than at trial to be possessed by Mr. Colvin. The authority exists, and James Colvin nonetheless requests that that conviction be reversed. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Sarah Harrington, and I represent the United States in this appeal. Congress has broad authority to set penalties for conduct it deems to be criminal. In the case of Section 844H, the plain language of the statute indicates that Congress clearly intended that its penalties be applied cumulatively to the penalties of all underlying felonies, including felonies such as Section 3631 and Section 241. Because that intent is so clearly expressed, Mr. Colvin's conviction under those three statutes did not violate the Double Jeopardy Clause. With respect to the firearms charge, Section 924C, although we concede that the Supreme Court's holding in Castillo controls this case, we do not believe that the Castillo error in this case rises to the level of plain error, and therefore we urge this court to affirm Mr. Colvin's conviction and sentence. I'll begin by addressing the Section 844H charge to the underlying felony of Section 3631. As this court held in Blacharski, the plain language of Section 844H clearly evinces Congress's intent that its penalties be applied cumulatively. In 1982, Congress amended Section 844H to add the word fire to the statute. In the legislative history of that amendment, Congress made clear that under the new version of the statute, whoever uses a fire to commit any felony which may be prosecuted in a court of the United States commits an additional offense and shall be subject to a sentence in addition to a sentence for the predicate offense. To make it even more clear, in 1988, Congress again amended Section 844H, this time by adding language directly to the text of the statute, stating that 844H was to apply to all underlying felonies, including a felony which provides for an enhanced punishment if committed by the use of a deadly or dangerous weapon or device. They did not use the word fire. Pardon me? They did know how to use it. I believe they didn't use it in this case because they were borrowing the language from Section 924C. That's true, Your Honor, except that... That's right, Your Honor. Except what we argue is that fire is itself inherently a dangerous device, always, in all situations. Because the nature of fire is such that it creates a danger to those, to the property and the people around it. Congress didn't state in these enhancement statutes that the, you know, weapon in one case or the dangerous device in this case. Lighting a candle on a birthday cake is not using fire in commission of a felony.
Funny use of the birthday cake to distract somebody and steal his wallet when he's distracted and using the birthday cake.
Well, I would say that's more akin to using a Bic lighter to see a lock that you're trying to pick. It facilitates the crime, but it's not being used in the commission of the crime.
And what it is used is that the dangerous weapon device, the statute kicks it. It's not being used that way, it doesn't kick it. That leads us to the problem of whether or not burning a cross on somebody's wall is using fire in a way that is deadly, dangerous weapon or device.
Right. Again, the phrase deadly or dangerous weapon or device isn't about the triggering of Section 844H. It's about applying Section 844H to underlying felonies that themselves have these enhancements, just to be clear about that. Again, Your Honor, I think that the use of fire is always inherently a dangerous device. It's always using a dangerous device. And this court...
Use of fire, yes.
And this court held in Hayward and in Hartbarger that Section 844H is applicable to crimes such as 241 and 3631, and in that case it rejected the argument that 844H should only be applied to underlying arson felonies. Now, the defendant...
But in that case, in terms of 241, right?
Yes, ma'am.
It was plain error there, so there was really no discussion in that case, wasn't there, saying that it was permissible to use 241?
Well, there was no discussion of whether fire was actually used in the conspiracy violation, which is something I can get to if you want.
Right, because here in the conspiracy, that's one of the primary arguments counsel makes, is that right. It doesn't make sense to use a conspiracy to violate civil rights with a predicate felony, because one can't use fire to commit a conspiracy,
because the conspiracy just right, and to that I would say, it's true that a conspiracy is complete at the time of the agreement in the sense that that's the point at which a crime has been committed, that's the point at which charges can be brought, that's all a prosecutor needs to prove in order to secure a conspiracy conviction under 241. However, it's not true in another sense, because this court has found that the crime of conspiracy is a continuing crime and continues until the completion of the goal for which the conspiracy was formed. In this case, the goal of the conspiracy was the burning of the cross. And so any acts, any reasonably foreseeable acts leading up to the completion of that goal, including the use of fire to light the cross, to burn the cross, is part of the conspiracy. No, that's not what they found. You're right.
So how do you distinguish that case from our situation here? Because as they point out, the only way the fire could be used to commit the crime is not somehow the defendant, I think they're communicated by
a
smoke signal.
Right, or a fire in the belfry. That's true. Well, in that case, I think the way they were thinking of the question is, was fire used to form the agreement? And certainly they're right. If the question is, was fire used to form the agreement, the only way to use fire to form the agreement is, as you said, using smoke signals or some sort of lighting signals. But the real question is, was fire used in the commission of the conspiracy? And the conspiracy is not just the agreement. Well, it is just the agreement in the sense that that's all you need to have, but
yes.
It is a continuum. That's right.
And of course, the United States keeps reminding us.
Right.
That's why it's an in-court offense.
Right. That's true, Your Honor, except that this court has held that it is a continuing crime.
But for the purpose of statute of limitations, you're trying to figure out when you can prosecute a conspiracy. The answer is within 5 years of the last order act. And it doesn't mean that a conspiracy is formed by the overt act. Or is the overt act?
Okay, but under Pinkerton, a defendant is liable for all the acts of his co-conspirators that contribute to the goal of the conspiracy that are reasonably foreseeable. And in this case, again, using fire to burn a cross is certainly a reasonably foreseeable act in a conspiracy to burn a cross.
But 844 doesn't penalize the use of fire during a felony or in furtherance of the felony, but rather the use of fire to commit a felony. So I think you're going beyond
Again, I would say that I believe that the acts leading up to the felony up to the cross burning are part of the conspiracy because they contribute to the goal.
And if the burglar takes out, he points his dick, he uses that, and then he manages to pick the lock, and he's now committed the crime of robbery
right. By
using fire.
No, Your Honor, because, again, the use of the Bic lighter in that case facilitated the crime of robbery, but it was not used to commit the robbery. It was not... Because it's no different from using a flashlight to illuminate. Okay. For the sake of the argument, I'll go with you there.
If you do that, then what's your best argument that this fire is a deadly dangerous weapon?
Well, although Mr. Corwin has tried to characterize this crime as a crime in which nobody was injured, just an expression of someone's opinion, we, as the United States, consider cross-burnings to be very serious crimes. The history of cross-burning in this country is a violent history. It's a frightening history. The people who lived in this house where the cross was burned were terrified by the burning of the cross. They had to leave their home. We believe...
You do consider it a crime of violence, no violence.
Correct.
At least I'm sorry, I was talking with your colleague, I said, if this service is defensive, it's possible to say
correct. And the district court in this case instructed the jury that the section 3631 and 240.
Well, in that case, it was clear that there were circumstances where you could hear the people, fire the people. How about your case? Any other circumstances that you
found? Well, they were carrying loaded weapons, and one of the co-conspirators said, I'm going to take this weapon and put it in my belt in case anyone comes out, at which point I'll use it.
Your bottom line is if you were in that house and you ran across in these circumstances, I'd go along and you call the fire department.
I would call 911 and ask that the police come immediately, yes. And lucky for them, they didn't run out of the house and encounter these people who had loaded weapons and were ready to use them. I'd like to, my time is running short, I'd like to just address the 924C, the firearms violation claim, if I can. I trust this court received the letter, which we recognize that we committed an error in urging the court to apply Sandoval to this case. We now agree that the Supreme Court's holding United States v. Castillo is controlling. However, because Mr. Colvin's lawyer did not object to the Castillo error at trial, this court must review that error under the plain error standard. And under that standard, Mr. Colvin must demonstrate a likelihood that the outcome of the trial would have been different absent the error. And because all of the evidence presented to the jury that tended to prove that he committed this firearm violation also tended to prove that the type of firearm he carried in that case was an SKS semi-automatic rifle, we would urge that this court uphold his conviction and his entire sentence. Thank you very much.
Yes. Actually, the facts indicate that the fire went out before the fire department arrived. Perhaps if I thought that the fire was a danger to my house or my family or something like that, I would. But this fire was not. It was extinguished before the fire department ever arrived. And I'd like to point out that... yes, but not because of the burning, not because I thought the burning cross was putting me in danger, but only because there might be other people around. But the burning cross itself... Correct. But the cross... Yes, absolutely. But the cross itself, with the fire that was extinguished before the fire department showed up, it was not what was putting anybody in danger. I would agree with... We agree that cross burning is a very serious crime in the United States. Fire was used to intimidate, yes. But what we don't agree with, and may I finish my statement? What we do not agree with is that the fire itself is what creates the crime of violence. We believe that the violence involved is psychological violence. And that's why that a burning cross with all of its inherent messages that it conveys does psychological damage, not physical damage, to potential victims. Thank you.